This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:36 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezril. And, you know, we've more or less been spending most of our show, or all of our show, talking about COVID-19 and its impact on the world economy and so on. We saw two press conferences just held, one from the health ministry, just giving some brief updates, as well as Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, the prime minister, giving us the announcement of a revised economic stimulus package, which I think, based on our analyst earlier, Lawrence Todd, said that it was more focused on social welfare. We're now moving on to talking about how the outbreak can impact businesses, particularly in terms of contractual obligations. So this comes after several companies that are doing business with Chinese firms are re-examining the terms and conditions of their contracts, some of which they may need to break. And this stems from the changes they've had to make to adapt to COVID-19, such as trade logistics and employee policies, among other things.
So the big question here is, when do companies have the right to determine that they need to essentially break their legally binding promises, especially when it's due to circumstances beyond your control? For instance, here at home, one of the hardest hit sectors include tech firms, particularly in Penang, which is actually one of the world's biggest electronics and electrical hubs. And Penang's firms have relied on as much as 60% of components and materials from China. So it's really no surprise that there might be some real struggles there.
Yeah, I think even if you just observe from a day-to-day basis, we're sort of asked to sort of try your best to continue things as per normal, but at the same time, take as many precautions as you can, right? Go forth with social distancing, try not to be in crowded places, try not to meet as many people. So that would likely apply to work as well. If there are things that you cannot commit to, if you're contractually obliged to, say, go on with an event that you are supposed to have in the next few months, and you can't have it, you know, what happens then?
Yeah. And while this the outbreak has affected firms that directly deal with China, it's actually impacted more than, you know, these tech companies. For instance, Mas has actually offered unpaid leave for 13,000 of its employees. And that brings into question, you know, the nature of these contracts. So it's not just about these legally binding promises to, your business stakeholders, but also to your employees. What implications does this impact have? And how does it fit into the bigger picture of, the contracts of these employees, for instance? You know, is it stated? Are there clauses that give exceptions for cases like this that legally allow, you know, companies like Mas to just, you know, affect basically their entire workforce? So it's quite interesting and dynamic when it comes to addressing legal documents and contracts.
Because I think it can be quite frustrating for companies, right? If you want to you want to fulfill those obligations, but because of what's going on right now out there, you just can't. The events are cancelled, people don't want to meet physically. There are just some of the things that you work at, you just cannot get done. And I think if some of you who has had their work and future work plans affected by the outbreak, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And if you own a business, we'd like to hear from you as well, right? You know, have there been things that you have promised to fulfill that you so far cannot? Because I think that's, at this point in time, with things still constantly shifting and moving around, that's if it hasn't happened yet, it may just happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really puts into, I think this was really something I didn't even think of, this whole contract. We've been so caught up in, like you said, you know, social distancing and all these measures that some of them, you know, that we've heard from the press conference earlier today, that the implications are so complex and are so intricate that it's we take things for granted sometimes when it comes to business and job security. When we plan for things, right, there's always this notion of
Stability.
Yeah, constant stability and assuming that everything's going to be okay all the time, with slight fluctuations and dips in businesses. And, the COVID-19 happens and then we're forced to re-examine all these complex things that is really hard to comprehend, and asking who makes the shots, and so it's quite, just the situation has been a roller coaster ride for me personally, trying to understand what's happening here for everyone.
For all of us.
Yeah.
We are now going to have that conversation to understand some of the legalese and legalities together with IP lawyer Soren Singh. Soren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Kelvin and Hezril. How are you guys doing?
Hi, yeah.
Managing. Full stop, managing. So to start off, could you give us a snapshot of legal-related concerns or disruptions that companies and businesses are facing due to COVID-19?
All right. The disruptions are, they're rippling in the industries. So it starts off with the ones which are first hit by virtue of the non-attendance. So this would be, for example, you have your hotels and the event organizers. And then it ripples down to airlines and restaurants. And then you have the spin-off industries connected to these main industries. So you have a lot of the legal issues that come about by virtue of cancellations, people not wanting to come, airline tickets that have been like on the basis of non-refundable sales. What happens to those? People wanting to be extra cautious, those who are on the paranoid spectrum on the one hand, who just wants to say, I want my money back and I'm not going to do anything else. And then those who are a bit more cautious and they are trying to examine what can or cannot be done in the contracts that they are stuck in. And then they have those who are trying to take advantage of the situation and trying to either not perform a contract or terminate. And then the issue comes about, can they do so? What circumstances? Is it a black and white situation? And as we know, when it comes to legal matters, it's never black and white. It's always, we survive in the areas of gray. And that's some of the issues we see cropping up in our discussions with clients, customers, friends, colleagues, and so on.
So talking about contracts, there's this thing we've come across called force majeure. What does it mean and how is it actually relevant to business owners?
This clause, force majeure, it is a clause that nobody talks about, nobody wants to even concern with. It's something that is only done and added into a contract at the tail end of its drafting. But all of a sudden, it's become the most interesting clause to talk about now. And it essentially what it says is that in circumstances which are unforeseeable, that prevents a party or both parties from performing a contract, in those circumstances, the contract is deemed to be non-performable, and therefore it terminates or it ends by virtue of the occurrence of a supervening event. So this is an event that is not due to either party, either party's conduct or the act or omission, but it's due to circumstances outside the control of the party. So this would cover things like an act of God, it would cover like acts of government, riots, some kind of the tempest, bad weather, so on and so forth. And usually in these clauses, the drafting of it really matters, because unlike China, which has a civil code system where what amounts to a force majeure is it's sort of implemented into the contract. In Malaysia, it is pretty much a contract drafting-driven thing. So it depends how the clause is worded in a contract. So it's very rare to find things like epidemics and pandemics included into a contract. Most of the common terms would be an act of God, act of government. So in that regard, is this an act of God? Some wanting to terminate the contract or wanting to escape a contract may say it is, because who knows where the virus came from. But then on the other side, you may have an interesting argument saying that God wasn't involved in this. It was someone who decides to, eat a bat, or that is the cause in the end. And therefore, it wasn't an act of God, it was an act of man. And that becomes an interesting issue in contract disputes, whether this was something that falls within the force majeure. And similarly now, which is why you would also see a lot of lobbyists trying to compel, not just in Malaysia, but in countries around the world, to get the government to do something, to either declare a state of emergency, to have a lockdown, to have clear guidelines on what can or cannot be done, working from home or quarantining for 14 days and whatnot. The whole idea behind it is that once it becomes a regulatory or legislative endeavor, you can then also argue it is an act of government and therefore try to then sneak your way into the force majeure element by saying it was a governmental intervention that caused this contract to be no longer performable.
So what would be the, I guess, what would make a successful case for a force majeure, right? Given that if, let's say, in some other countries, if, let's say, they announce a lockdown, but the circumstances be that, oh, only for non-essential things. You cannot go to the saloon. You cannot perhaps go to the gym, or for example, but you can still go to restaurants, you can still go to pharmacies and supermarkets, yeah. And you can also go to work. Non-essential travel is cancelled or withheld, but with that particular circumstance where you can actually still go to work, does that still meet that requirement that's needed to say, well, I can legally cancel this contract?
Yeah. So what would make a very good question, what would make a successful argument, I would say at the top of my head, would be, number one, does the wording of the contract cover a situation of epidemics and pandemic? Is it clearly spelled out in the contract? If it is, you know, you just imagine of like collecting points, you've collected more points to be able to do so. If it doesn't, then it falls back on the other existing words in the contract. Does it have enough to cover the situation? Next would be, if you have a governmental sort of mandate or guideline or a lockdown sort of advocated by the Ministry of Health, or Ministry of Home Affairs, that helps your case because it says, look, even if I want to go, there's a curfew out there and therefore I cannot. I have to, and I have to stay home and not go to the restaurant where I've promised to have this event. And next would be things like, what is the level of participation or involvement? So for example, if you're just going for a one-to-one hairdressing or salon appointment, you can still do so in a way, arguably, because it's just a one-to-one. If you take safety measures like wear a mask and your temperature is taken when you enter the shop, you can still carry out the contract. It's not that you can't do it. But compared to, say, for example, going to an event or a gathering where food will be served, plenty of banter taking place, and therefore the chances of the widespread transmission of the disease becomes higher after what happened recently in Sri Pataling. So what makes a successful case would be what I just mentioned, and also the nature of the contract that is being performed or carried out. Can it still be done, or is it impossible?
So how would a contract be revisited or reviewed later on after the COVID-19 outbreak hopefully tapers off?
Yeah, that's the hope for everyone. We're doing the same here, praying very hard that it tapers off. But in the meantime, when it comes to contracts, I would think I would divide them into two categories. One would be instances where there's a finality to the contract. It's a one-off performance. For example, an event, flying on a certain date, carrying out, checking into a hotel at a certain day, a certain period of time. So that is a one-off finality to it. In that instance, force majeure kicks in and therefore it's over. It can't be performed. You get your money back. Parties are put into the position they were before the contract was entered. As opposed to a continuous contract. For example, if you have, delivery of flowers to certain offices or branch of you've got a branches of restaurants and offices, and you have got a weekly delivery of flowers obligation, you may want not to do that anymore because there's a fear that you're meeting more people and there's risk of the disease spreading. But once the disease has tapered off or it's finished, then the contract should resume because it is only during that period of time when it's suspended. But beyond that, it should carry on, to my mind.
Right. Do you think after this, maybe this issue tapers off, will firms, businesses, and lawyers as well perhaps start taking this particular clause, the force majeure, a bit more seriously? Because as you mentioned earlier, it's something that's sort of not really looked at, it's something that's sort of brushed off sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it's already happening now. Law firms are publishing articles saying things like, is your contract immune from the coronavirus? And all of a sudden, this has become a very live topic. So contracts are being redrafted. Force majeure events are being looked at. So this is definitely going to be an issue that people are going to revisit. Akin to what happened when there was the great flood back in Dataram Merdeka, and many of the cars belonging to lawyers, unfortunately, were underwater all of a sudden, force majeure events became important and floods had to be inserted into it to try to, you know, deal with that problem. So I would definitely see, you know, we'll be seeing contracts where epidemics, pandemics, existence of virus, bacteria, whatever, different permutations of them, pardon the pun, would evolve and mutate and find its way into the new bunch of contracts that would be coming up soon.
Yeah, so taking a look at other legal matters in business at this time, what are the rights and responsibilities of employees and employers during this uncertainty, especially with work from home arrangements and paid or unpaid leave, which we've seen with the mass Malaysian Airlines employees having been given voluntary unpaid leave?
I hope you don't mind, but on the issue of what the position of mass, it is. I would rather not comment on that because I'm not sure what is the ongoing situation in terms of any legal consequences that may arise from that. So I want to reserve my comment on that. But what I will say is that there was a guideline by MOH prior to, you know, the increase of infections in Malaysia, basically saying that any medical bills arising from an employee coming back from the affected countries, all that should be borne by the employer. And in terms of insisting on someone taking the annual leave or a paid leave, you can't force them to do that. You can't force someone from taking up an annual leave as part of wanting to stay home. Similarly, when it comes to unpaid leave, the position that to me would be you cannot force an employee to take an unpaid leave. The person still wants to come to work. The person takes risk in wanting to do so, but you can't force or compel someone to take unpaid leave. Another interesting facet would be if an employer insists for his or her employee to come to work in circumstances that are endangering that particular employee, that is something that the employee needs to look at seriously. Are steps being taken to ensure that the employee is kept safe and the welfare of the employee is looked after? That's also a necessary consideration in looking at the rights of the employee in wanting to report to work. So these are some of the elements to look at. I don't think, because there is no serious lockdown or curfew that has been imposed by the government, how each employer is having to handle the position of the employee, whether it's work from home, alternate, sanitizing the place, separating the groups, having a business continuity plan, how is that explained to the employee and the rationale behind it, all of that become relevant. There's no one standard way of doing it, but I think so long as it's being done in a way to ensure that everyone's kept safe and the employee is not put in a situation where their health is at risk, that I think would be paramount. If that is being done, I think then the employer can carry on to do what they deem best for the safety of the employee in the workspace.
Soren, thank you very much for your thoughts.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too. That was Soren Singh, IP lawyer, talking to us about businesses and their contractual obligations and whether or not COVID-19, the outbreak, if that might provide some sort of relief in some of the work that they can no longer execute. If your business has had to stall some of its plans because of the outbreak, you can let us know. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.